Coming up today, it's episode 91 of In the Front Row with Mike Vaccaro. Today, we sit down with former NFL cornerback Dre Bly. Bly, who grew up in Virginia, tells us about his story and his journey from Virginia to North Carolina to the NFL, spending 11 years with the Rams, the Lions, the Broncos, and the 49ers. Now, he has embarked into coaching and is recently hired as a defensive analyst for the Charlotte 49ers, and he's coaching alongside his son, Trey, who played 4 years for the 49ers. Dre Bly, our guest, shares his story today in episode 91 of In the Front Row with Mike Vaccaro. Dre, thanks so much for joining us here today. It's a pleasure to have you with us here, and congratulations on the new job, defensive analyst for the Charlotte 49ers. My first question, you know, your son Trey played 4 years there for the 49ers. He's a student defensive assistant. So are you your son's boss right now?
Well, actually, I'm not going to say that I'm his boss. I'm actually, we co-workers. How about that? And so that's actually one of the coaches just came in. But no, we co-workers. I kind of try to remove myself from being his boss, but I kind of assist him and give him information. And it's pretty cool to see him in his light, to see him, the work that he's doing, the progress that he's made in 1 year. He's very, very intelligent, very smart. He's good with the computer, and he's passionate about it. So it's cool to see him in that light. You know, he's been able to get a start in a way that I wasn't, and it's pretty cool to see it.
Well, Dre, once again, talking about your baseball career, and then obviously in high school you excelled at football. When did you think, was it high school when you thought that, okay, football is going to be my path, maybe, you know, to college, number one, and then potentially to the NFL?
Well, I was a four sports, star coming out of high school. I played baseball, ran track, played basketball, played football. I actually liked basketball just as well, but once I realized I wasn't growing anymore, I had to devote my attention more towards baseball and football. And so that was kind of like where my focus was. Deion Sanders was my role model growing up. Obviously Deion and Bo were the guys that we, all admired, at a young age, and Michael Jordan. But Deion was the guy that I found myself more like, because I was a lefty swinging. I was a skilled guy in a sense, similar build, I felt like. And so that was the guy that I followed. And so baseball and football were the two sports that I felt like I could excel in, and thought I could do it both at the collegiate level. And I actually could, but after I picked off 13 picks my first year playing college football, that's when I realized that, okay, this might be the way I need to go. And it was hard to do both in college at the University of North Carolina. So I just dove in here first with football, took all the skill sets I learned from baseball, all the different skill sets I learned from playing other sports, and just poured it all in towards football and took it and ran with it.
Did you have an opportunity to play baseball? Were you given a chance to play for the Tar Heel baseball team as well?
Oh, I did. I actually played half of a season. I had, a lot of people don't know this, but I played in the Virginia Commonwealth Games, which was big. I was the fast little black leadoff hitter that can run. I was a 6'3", 60 guy. That was big back in the day. If you could run, you always had a shot. So I had like 5 private workouts prior to going to UNC, with major league teams, and all simply because I was running. I could run, and I was very athletic, right? And so I had the opportunity to get drafted, but my parents, who were educators during that time, told those baseball scouts that you're wasting your time if you draft my son, unless you draft him in the first, second round, right? Then we'll look at it. But what they were talking about back then was me going to school to play football, but then playing pro baseball in the spring, which was a common thing back during that time. And my mom and dad, with those guys being educators, and then those guys doing their research, heard it was hard. Most of those guys, can't do both. And, either you drop academically, but you end up leaning more towards, one sport or the next. And so my parents felt like that unless they drafted me high, that wasn't going to be anything that I was going to do. So they were basically wasting a pick if they drafted me. So that was the only reason why I didn't get drafted coming out. I would have been a late round guy. And again, you know, if you're athletic, you know, most of the way it is now, even back then, you know, if you can run, you was very athletic, mm-hmm. they were going to draft you, right? And I was an all-state baseball player coming out of Virginia Beach, Chesapeake. You know, I played in the Virginia Commonwealth game. So that's where I got a lot of my exposure. Then I had a player that got drafted the year before I came out. A pitcher, Jimmy Anderson, who went seventh round with the Pittsburgh Pirates. And so that's another reason or why I got the exposure that I did baseball-wise, because they were coming to see him. And so when they came to see him, you know, they saw that they had a fast leadoff hitter, a guy that was a pretty good baseball player that can get on base. And so that kind of got me my exposure. So that's when I left baseball alone. And I just, you know, devoted all my attention towards football.
Well, football was, North Carolina was a choice, but how'd you get out of the state of Virginia when you have Virginia and Virginia Tech there? Why was North Carolina your choice?
I grew up a big Tar Heel fan. I mean, so that's basically what it was. You know, Michael Jordan and UNC mm-hmm. basketball was always on TV as a, you know, back in Chesapeake, Virginia. And so, you know, just it was just hard to deny that Carolina blue. And then once I had a chance to visit the campus, I fell in love with the campus. It was close to home. And so, but that was kind of like, you know, the deal, what attracted me to the University of North Carolina. If I didn't go to Carolina, I was going to Virginia Tech. But Tech and Virginia and, you know, North Carolina were the schools that really recruited me. Syracuse was one of the schools that was in my top five. It was one of my visits, and Syracuse was big back then. And then Clemson was the other school. But Virginia was the only school. So Virginia don't realize this. They didn't have a shot because they only recruited me as a receiver, right? The other schools recruited me as an athlete, right, giving me the opportunity to play defense or offense. And so I don't know if you guys knew this, but I was a lot of people don't know, but I was first team All-State receiver my senior year, and I played receiver in the Virginia All-State game and got MVP at receiver in the Virginia All-State game. So that was kind of like Virginia's deal. They wanted me as receiver.
Well, they say a lot of times you go on the defensive end, but you, because you can't catch, but that's not the case with you as a freshman, 11 interceptions. So you made that transition pretty smoothly to the defensive side.
Yeah, that didn't apply to me. And just so you know, you heard me say 13 earlier. I got two in the bowl.
That's
so
right. They didn't count them at that time.
No, they didn't count bowls at that time. So when people always, you know, giving, you know, introducing me and giving my statistics, I correct them because I got 13 that year, 13 or 12 games, just so you know. And so, but nah, man, that had a lot to do with the reason why I was able to have the success I did at defense was because of my ability to catch the ball, which I think, you know, playing baseball and playing multiple sports kind of, you know, helped give me the awareness and the ball skills for me to be able to have the success that I did at the cornerback position.
Was there a defensive scheme that played into that as well and helped you out to make sure you were in the right position to get those interceptions?
Nah, you just put me on the field. I mean, that was basically put me on the field, give me a pass rush. I do the rest. And people ask me that. It was a certain type of player that you were, or a system or type of coverage that you preferred. You know, I'm not going to say it one stood out more than the next, because I thought I was pretty good at playing multiple coverages. You know, I was good with man, but also I was good with my eyes. You know, a lot of the times, you know, a lot of those interceptions I got my first year came from me having good vision, because it was times that ball wasn't thrown to me and I was able to make a play because I had good vision. I was able to see and anticipate where the ball was going. So that's playing with vision, right? And so I think I was a good man-to-man cover guy. Thought I was good in zone. And so there wasn't one particular system that I think I stood out more in than the next.
One of just five freshmen to be an All-American your first season at North Carolina as well. You're the rookie of the year in this ACC, first team All-ACC. When you look back at it, what do you remember most about that first year in Chapel Hill?
Man, it went so fast. Man, I didn't realize what I was doing at the time. I was just a kid from Chesapeake out there playing, running around and having fun. And I didn't realize until one of my you know, one of my teammates who was my free safety, Omar Brown, might have been after the 5th, 6th game, and he pulled me aside and was like, "Bly, do you know what you're doing right now?" I'm like, "Nah, I'm just playing." He said, "Dude, you having a like an all-time year type of year and start, and you mess around gonna be All-American and be up for a thought finalist." And still, even at that time, I had no clue what that was or knew what I was doing. I was just playing, doing my job, man. And that's the beauty of it, man. Like, when you're just out there playing, even now, right? When I look back on what I did and what I, you know, done as a player, I'm like, wow. When I was in it, I had no clue what I was doing, the plays I was making, you know, the impact that I had. And that's what it should be. That's what it should be about, right? When you win and you just play, if you're doing your job and having fun, the rest will take care of itself.
As a coach now, is that kind of part of the message that you tell your kids?
That's part of the message, man. And allow these players to specialize in what they're good at, right? You know, people ask me all the time is, how can you transition from a player to a coach? And the expectations, I said, I don't expect these guys to do what I did. I don't expect these guys to be like Champ Bailey, you know, Julius Peppers. I expect these guys to be the best individual that they can be. And so as a coach, evaluator, I try to evaluate and see what these guys do best, right? And the first thing I tell these guys, you just make sure when I'm watching tape, you do that better than anything else. I'm able to see and identify who you are as a player. And so that's my message to these kids I coach and recruit, is try to specialize in what they do well, and then what they don't do well, you try to develop those areas to the point where, you know, they can help your team and help themselves.
You speak about coaches, Mack Brown, your first coach at North Carolina, and then Carl Torbush came in after that. What kind of impact did those guys have on you, maybe on the field and off the field as well?
Well, Mack is a mentor. You know, he hired me, you know, both as a player and as a coach, right? He gave me opportunity, but I got a great deal of respect for Mack. You know, just, you know, what he represents. He's one of the all-time best coaches, you know. What he is as a leader, what he is as a CEO. I learned a lot from him, playing for him and working with him as well. And then Coach Torbush, man, just, you know, what he was to us, the late Carl Torbush, mm-hmm. you know, what he was to us as a DC, you know, allowing us to be able to play and play fast. You know, I tell people all the time, man, this is the thing with me being on the other side of the fence. And this is why I feel like more players are trending towards coaching. More people are looking for more players to coach. Don't overcomplicate the game, right? You got some of these geniuses who, you know, they try to make football trigonometry, and it's not, right? And so simplifying the game, you know, you got to be able to think. You can't be out there trying to think through an equation when you're out there on the field and expect us to play fast. And so what allowed us to play at the level that we played at University of North Carolina, Coach Torbush, it was simple, right? If you got good players, or if you understand what you're doing and knowing what you're doing, you'll play fast, which will lead to results. And that's the one thing I would say with Coach Torbush, what he did really, really well, he kept it simple. You know, we didn't have 100 plays, right? We kept it simple. We did those 5 plays really, really well, and we played really, really fast, which led to a lot of great results. And so that's the one thing I would say I learned from Torbush, was not overcomplicating things. And the one thing I learned from Mac is, you know, how to lead troops. You know, the number one quality you can have as a coach is, to me, is great leadership skills. You know, being able to lead men. You know, me being with Dan Campbell last year, the reason why we did so well last year in Detroit, because he's a phenomenal leader. And so to me, those are the best qualities that you can have as a coach. And I think I've been around some great guys, even Dick Vermeil, right? Outstanding leader. And so, but those are some of the things I learned from Coach Torbush and Coach Mack.
3-time All-American, first team in your college career, going up against some of the really good players at the time. What were some of the players that you loved going up against, wide receivers you loved going up against? I'm sure as a Torrey Holt at that time was somebody you battled against at NC State. Who else do you remember, you know, going up against and having success against them?
Well, I say the toughest two guys I brought into college was Torrey Holt and Petey Ward. right? Peter Warwick is one of the most dynamic players to ever play. I tell people that all the time. You know, what he was able to do on the football field, the plays that he was able to make, you're just not going to see again, right? He was phenomenal as a player, and it tore help, you know, what he was able to do at NC State, the impact that he had in Raleigh, in the ACC, professionalism that he displayed at that position in college and the league, man. I mean, two of the best, man. I would say other than those two, Jermaine Crowell was a guy that was pretty good at Virginia. A guy named Desmond Clark that went to Wake Forest, a bigger guy, big body. He had a pretty successful career at Wake Forest. I would probably say those are the first four names that, I mean, Torrey and Peter Warwick is a no-brainer. But I would say that the next two after those guys is probably Desmond Clark and who was the other name I said? Desmond and Jermaine Crowell. Those four.
Torrey became your teammate with the Rams, and he's keeps missing out on the Hall of Fame. Is he a Hall of Fame wide receiver in your mind?
No doubt, man. You know, one of my best friends, we were drafting together. Let me tell you how crazy this is. We hated each other in college. Hated each other. Like, every time I went out in Chapel Hill and Durham, that was a question I had to answer in the barbershop or in the streets is, Dre, what are you going to do with Torrey Holt when you play him? And so he used to get on my nerves, right, because people went back and forth on that conversation, on that debate. But to go from being rivals, hating each other, guts, to being best friends and having a chance to be, you know, with him the first 4 years and to see it day to day of how he prepared and how he worked. Torrey is a Hall of Famer, and it's, you know, it's frustrating, man. You know, I told Torrey, you know, you've done all you can do. It's kind of like, you know, it's kind of been looked over, but the reason why, you know, because of his professionalism, you know, Torrey has done everything at a high level, even how he is off the field. You know, he's not loud, he's not outspoken, or, you know, and a lot of these guys, they are able to get into the hall because they, you know, they speak out, they flamboyant, and, you know, they flash, and that's not Torrey. But I told Torrey, his time is coming, and when it comes, we're going to celebrate, man. But, I mean, he was the first receiver to get the 10,000 yards in NFL history. I mean, he played a tremendous role in the success that Kurt Warner, Marshall Faulk, Ozzie Bruce, the success that they had. Torrey is, to me, same caliber of player, man. So his time is coming, and I can't wait to celebrate with him.
Yeah, it seems like it's just a matter of time for him. Well, for you, your time came in the NFL when you were drafted in the second round, 1999, by the Rams. Take us through draft day, when you found out and what that was like when you knew you were going to St. Louis.
Well, I mean, you mentioned it, right? You know, I was a three-time All-American coming out of college, so I experienced a lot of success early. And, you know, I had a chance to leave my redshirt sophomore year, but decided to stay, right, because there were things that I wanted to do, which was on my bucket list, which was, you know, having a chance to win the Thorpe, you know, having a chance to go both ways, you know, which is just won the Heisman, having a chance to be mentioned amongst those names, mm-hmm. You know, so that's why I came back to school. And so didn't have quite the senior year, the redshirt junior that I wanted, that I would hope for. So therefore, I slipped in the draft. So draft day for me was a little different, right? Like, for most guys, they're excited to hear their name. But just knowing that I had dropped in the draft, you know, it was five, six corners. It was actually six corners picked in front of me. And I remember each name, each pick that went before me in that draft. And so when my name got called, I was pretty disappointed, pretty bummed out. And then on top of that, to get drafted by the losingest team of the 90s. Right, which was the worst team. The Rams was the worst team of the 90s. So draft day for me wasn't good. And so that was my journey. That was my story. And so, that's what it was for me.
Well, maybe it didn't start well for you, but it ended well with a Super Bowl victory. You know, again, you're on the defensive end. Offense was the greatest show on turf, but that defense was pretty stout as well. What do you remember about the defense of the Rams in winning that Super Bowl?
Well, you know, you talk about, you know, what the Rams was in 1998. You know, they had won three games, and that's, you know, another part of my story and my journey when I'm here mentoring these kids and coaching, talking about, you know, going from being bad to being good. And so I told you, I talked about him earlier, but Dick Vermeil was a phenomenal leader, man. And, you know, the messages that he gave, that he delivered, you know, we bought in, we believed. And you know, again, you know, I think it was a collaboration of guys coming together, believing in themselves, working, you know, hard during the summers. And it just all came together, man. You know, nobody ever thought that when Trent Green went down, that we would have still had the year that we had. But starting in that, you know, the training camp hot summer days, man, we believed. And we still didn't realize how good we were until we got to 6-0, right? Once we got to 6-0, we sitting there looking, okay, we understand, you know, we're the best team in the league right now, offensively and defensively. And so the reason why, to answer your question, the reason why we played so well defensively was because of going up against the guys that we face every day in practice. And, you know, Isaac Bruce and Torrey Holt and Marshall Faulk and Kurt Warner, which I think kind of led to our success as a team. And so it was outstanding run, man. Like, and I tell people all the time, I didn't realize, you know, like I came into the NFL winning a Super Bowl, right? And it happened so fast, but I didn't get a chance to really cherish it or appreciate it because that's what I was expected, right? I mean, it just happened so fast. And so when I look back on what we were able to accomplish and what we did, man, it was an outstanding run and outstanding moments, man, that we would cherish for the rest of our lives.
Well, you say kind of iron sharpening iron there, going up against those guys in practice all the time. We were lucky to have John Bunting, one of your defensive coaches from that team, on here previously, and he got really emotional talking about, you know, winning that Super Bowl. Again, now that you're through that journey and looking back, do you get emotional as well thinking about doing that so early on in your career?
Yeah, you do, man. We actually have our 25th year reunion coming up this September. You know, St. Louis still acknowledges us, brings us back, show love. But yeah, man, like, you know, just thinking about it, you know, what we're able to accomplish. Actually, I get emotional when I'm watching the Super Bowl and I'm hearing the national anthem being played. And so that, you know, I kind of get goosebumps when, you know, whenever I see that. You know, I played in 2 Super Bowls, won one, lost one. Had a chance to be a part of something special. And so the relationships I share with those guys, we still on text threads and we talk all the time. You know, Isaac Bruce, so Marshall Faulk, Aeneas Williams, Torrey Holt, you know, Todd Light, you know, Isaac, you know, big old Orlando Pace. I mean, we talk all the time, man. Landon Fletcher, he lives here in Charlotte. Leonard Little lives here in Charlotte. So we talk often, man. The relationship that we share is something special, something that we all cherish.
Yeah, a lot of big-time names that you mentioned there. No wonder you guys won the Super Bowl, as you said. That was Super Bowl 34, the win over the Titans in Atlanta. You lost 36 to the Patriots in New Orleans. For you, eventually, your time with the Rams ended. You became a free agent. You went to Detroit. The Detroit then, not the Detroit now, obviously, but what attracted you to the Lions and making that change from St. Louis?
Well, I mean, the payday was great, right? But just have an opportunity to be valued, right? Somebody looking at you as a leader. They really valued me because of what I was to the Rams. And, you know, back then, or at least back, you know, even in today, you know, if you're coming from a Super Bowl caliber team, other people value you. And it was more value that they had in me than what the Rams did. And so I, you know, and then looking at Steve Mariucci was a guy that was in San Fran and in the division that I was in, so I was very familiar with him, and he was very familiar with me. So I kind of admired what he represented, and so that's what attracted me to Detroit, right? You know, I was a guy that felt like, you know, where I was at that point in my career, I felt like I was in my prime, felt like I was going to be able to bring some spark, some energy to the city, and I was able to do that.
Yeah, 2-time Pro Bowler with the Lions as well. Why did your game maybe go up a notch to the next level when you were with Detroit?
Well, I'm not going to say it went up a notch. I just, you know, I just got more recognition. You know, my third year in St. Louis, I had 6 picks, right? Had 2 touchdowns. My fourth year there, I started every game, you know, made plays, had 2 picks. It might have been 3. So I don't think, you know, my game went up. I just, you know, as you get into year 4 or 5, that's when you're in your prime, right? And I just grew every year. I just got more exposure. I would probably say I was more confident, but I don't think my game went up because I think year three and four I was playing at a high level. I just think I just got more exposure, you know, going to Detroit. I think what set me over the top was playing on Thanksgiving Day against Brett Favre, and when I intercepted him twice in front of the world, that kind of elevated me to the Pro Bowl status and me being an elite guy in the NFL. And so, but just the opportunity, man, I think Detroit got me at the right time, which was in my prime. And so regardless if I was in Detroit or if I was in St. Louis or if I was in New England, because that was my next stop, they were going to get the same player because I was in my prime. And that's what I did. That's what I specialized in as a player. And that was getting the football. And so, and that's what I tell people. That's just who I was as a player. I did in the college, I did in the high school, therefore I was going to do it in the league. It was just a matter of what jersey it was going to be in.
And you mentioned with Detroit, you know you're playing on Thanksgiving. What is that like to be part of, you know, that history of the NFL, to be playing on Thanksgiving, but knowing that you're the only game going on at that time and it's always in Detroit?
Did it four times as a coach, I mean, as a player, and did it this past year as a coach, man. It's, you know, again, you know, outside of the Super Bowl, that probably is one of the biggest stages to play on, you know, during the season. And so it was great to be a part of, had a chance to win my first one, got the Gobbler Award, and you know, family coming in, having a chance to experience it with me. So it was a great time, man. And, you know, I was glad I was able to play a part of that and be a part of something special.
During your time in Detroit, you're also known as you got the Good Guy Award from the media as well. What did an honor like that mean to you?
Well, I mean, it was kind of like how I was raised, right? I'm very personable. You know, I'm social. I smile, have a good time. I'm honest, right? Which, you know, kind of got me in trouble a little bit as a player. But that's just me, man. Like, that's how I was raised. And so I'm not one of those guys who give you a bunch of candy, tell you a bunch of lies. I shoot it pretty straight, and that's, you know, kind of what made me the recruiter that I am, you know, in college. I'm honest. I just tell my story, right? You know, I was able to tell my story of what it meant to be a Tar Heel, and I'm going to be able to tell my story on what it means and the benefits you can get from being a Charlotte 49er, right? And people can relate to it. So I guess that's what it was at an early age when I was in Detroit. I was relatable. People like talking to me, so I would say I got that from my parents.
I can certainly see that. And from Detroit, time with the Broncos, the time with the other 49ers, the San Francisco 49ers as well. What do you consider yourself, a Ram, a Lion, a Bronco, 49er? What when you look back at your 11 years in the NFL, what do you consider yourself?
That's a good question. You know, I played for St. Louis, played for in Detroit, and so, you know, I actually got on the Hall of Fame ballot, so I think it's going to be tough getting into. But, you know, like, if that day, if I ever got that phone call, like, who would I, you know, acknowledge, or, you know, which team would I would say that I would go in as? And so, you know, I won a Super Bowl in St. Louis, but I played my best individual ball and got the most individual accolades in Detroit. And so it's tough, man. It's tough. I don't know. I really don't know. You know, I had a great relationship with the Fords. Still feel like I'm, you know, part royalty in Detroit, but still having a chance to win the Super Bowl in St. Louis and being a part of those great teams. I don't know, man. I can't decide. I can't say.
So a chance maybe at the NFL Hall of Fame, at the Pro Football Hall of Fame at some point. Do you think you have a good shot at some point down the road here?
Statistically, you know, finishing with 43 picks, causing 20 fumbles, you know, you put those numbers up against anybody, right? You know, but just, you know, just talking about Torrey, man, you know, it's what you should be about numbers. You know, sometimes it's more about popularity and stuff like that. But, you know, Stephon Gilmore is one of my good buddies. I trained him and was telling him about, you know, some of this stuff, man, like, if I played in today's time, I might have finished with 70 picks, right? Because I throw the ball more.
Yeah.
But statistically, man, you put my numbers up against anybody, right? And it should be about numbers. Yeah, absolutely. if you base that thing off of stats, because anytime you finish with 43 picks and 20 fumbles, score 8 touchdowns, that's Hall of Fame caliber numbers.
Yeah, 167 games, 11-year career, outstanding career. And then you go into coaching. You know, like a lot of guys, you go into coaching. For you, minority coaching internships with New Orleans in Miami. Is that where you kind of got your start and got your first taste of what it would be like to be a coach?
Well, actually, I got going to high school, coaching at Myers Park. You know, coaching Trey helped getting, you know, that going. A lot of people don't really know that, you know. I had probably one of the top baseball programs in the state of North Carolina, having a travel baseball team, the Carolina Black Sox. You know, that's what let me know I can recruit, because I had to recruit players for my team. You know, I was stealing players from the other teams. And so, actually, Sam Howell played on my baseball team. A lot of people don't know this, but Sam Howell played on my Carolina Black Sox team at 15U and 16U.
Wow.
Or it might have been 16U, 17U. And I coached Sam Howell in 707. So the Carolina Stars was, I was, you know, first year that got going, I ran that. And so that kind of let me know that I had the skill set to coach and recruit. And once I left Myers Park, that's when I realized, okay, I need to go do something else. You know, I'm going to go dive in deep to see if I can, you know, do the time and put in the work. So that's when I did the minority internship with the Saints and the Miami Dolphins. And once I did that, you know, going through a camp with Sean Payton, after that, I knew I could do it. And so that's when I dove in head first. You know, Mac Brown was the guy that was following my progression. You know, he was advising me throughout that time. And, you know, he was seeing the impact that I was having in Charlotte coaching at Myers Park, right? Again, you know, Drake May left Huff and came to Myers Park when my kids played at Myers Park. You know, Moose Muhammad played at Myers Park. You know, he played in my youth football organization. You know, Jamar Nesbitt, Bryson Nesbitt, his daddy helped run my youth football organization. So, you know, Deems May, all these guys, you know, Frank Garcia, all these guys that was a part of my football organization, their kids, you know, I had a chance to touch their kid. And so, you know, just establishing all of this exposure and hype here in Charlotte, you know, to try to match what Mallard Creek was doing on the north side. We did all that in South Park, in Myers Park. And so that's when I realized, okay, I need to go take another step, because what we did, what we created at Myers Park was something special. And a lot of people don't know that, but that was, my son was like 32-5. Mm. And they all those guys came through my youth football organization. We fed all those kids to Myers Park, all of them. Just imagine this. If I came into your house, I had three teams. It was 6, let me see. It was 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. It was three teams. We were called the Hammerdown Tar Heels. I bought all the uniforms, me and my partner. We donated so we bought equipment and donated it to Myers Park. So they just used their facilities. Mm. Okay, so in that, we sponsored half of the team. And if I came in your house with Moose Muhammad, Jamar Nesbitt, Frank Garcia, who was the radio personality with the Panthers, Deems May, who played at Carolina, I'm missing one more. But that's the names, right? If I came in your house, and they were all coaches in the organization, if I come in your house and ask you if I can get your son, right, for free, or even if you're paying $100 to come play football with us, how are you going to say no?
You're a great recruiter. You're a great recruiter. That's a pretty good staff right there.
Tell me how you're going to say no. All of us was in Myers Park, in that Myers Park area, and how are you going to say no? And so we raised a bunch of kids in football, right, up through our organization and fed all those kids. Everybody didn't go to Myers Park, but majority of them did. Mm-hmm. And so that's when I realized, okay, I need to go take another step, because I'm recruiting and doing this, and I recruited coaches, I recruited players, and so that's when I realized I had a gift, you know. So that's when I dove in here first, man.
Yeah, it sounds like, again, you're very proud of those players, of what you've been able to accomplish there. Is that kind of what you get out of it? What's the biggest thing you get out of being a coach and trying to work with these young kids?
Well, just helping these kids have a chance to do what I did, right? Tell them about my journey, my process. I can give my personal testimony. I'm not stingy with information. I'm not looking for nothing in return and made it, right? I done it. I don't need no more stripes in my belt. So again, the level for me don't matter. Long as I'm helping and mentoring kids. My mother and father taught school for 30 plus years. My one sibling is a teacher at Moore High School. She taught Cam Chancellor. So it's in my DNA, right? So that's the thrill for me. And that's why I do what I do. I'm not looking for nothing in return. I just want to see these kids have a chance to do what I did and be better than me. And tell them my story. Because there's so many guys out here that's looking for stuff, personal favors and stuff in return, which I think would kind of muddy up all the water. You know, a lot of guys, I told you before, they're going to lie and give you candy, right? That's what it is. You know, they'll tell you one thing, then the next day, they're gone, right? And then they tell the same story that they didn't told the guy 5 minutes ago. You know what I'm saying? So, I love to see the growth of the player, to see all that he can gain from, you know, from doing what he does. And so that's the best part about it for me.
Well, again, your career speaks for itself. You're in the College Football Hall of Fame, the Virginia Sports Hall of Fame. Your number retired there or honored at North Carolina. You know, is there an honor that you received that really sticks out in your mind? Obviously, winning a Super Bowl, but of all the honors, again, College Football Hall of Fame, Virginia Sports Hall of Fame, what stands out to you?
Well, anytime you get mentioned, you know, anything with a Hall of Fame, you know, that's obviously a great accomplishment. Again, like when I was in it, you know, I didn't play for those accolades. But when you sit back and think about what you've done, the things that you did when you were in it, I say to myself, wow. And so when I got that phone call to get into the College Football Hall of Fame, didn't know how prestigious that Hall of Fame was. That group was, that fraternity was, and having a chance to see some of the names that was in that fraternity is pretty cool, you know, to say that my name is mentioned amongst those names. Because, again, I was telling somebody, when you go to the NFL, all you ever heard about was the Pro Football Hall of Fame, right? Mm-hmm. I didn't really know much about the College Football Hall of Fame, but once I went to New York and had a chance to see some of the names that was in and some of the men that was in that room, you know, I was like, wow, I'm part of this fraternity. So that's pretty cool, man. You know, anytime you can be a part of something like that, that's something to be proud of.
Well, again, you know, still kind of early on in your coaching career, but, you know, could we see you as a head coach somewhere at some point? Do you vision yourself? Do you have that as a goal, whether it be in college or whether it be back in the NFL?
Well, I do see myself, you know, when somebody asked me this 6 years ago when I first got in, you know, the first thing I would say was I wanted to be the best corners coach in all of football, whether it was collegially or professionally. And so I think in this profession, people think outside the box too fast. And so when they do that, they don't do the best job that they can in the position at the end. And so, you know, I took it year by year. I've grown tremendously since my first year as a coach. And this other thing, when you're dealing with a guy with my background, you know, sometimes you can be a threat to other people. You know, people are intimidated by guys like me because of the success that I had as a player. And so I understand that as well. And so, but this is the thing with me, man. I don't care what I've done as a player. I don't care what I've done as a coach. I'm always willing to learn. That's the beauty of it for me is trying to better my craft and get better every year. And I've done that. And so now I see myself as a leader. I grew tremendously as a coach this past year, having a chance to go to the NFL and to game plan every day. Not having to deal with recruiting or managing the day-to-day of a student, but just working on ball, you know, learning ball, you know, presenting to the defensive staff of my project, right? Hearing other guys present. We didn't do that in college. You know, we presented. It was like I was in school of football 24 hours a day. And I loved it. I grew tremendously as a coach. And so I can see myself in a more of a leadership role, you know. And so I look forward to the opportunity. The one thing I can do, I can lead a group of men. I can recruit. I can talk. And I can lead a group of men. So I can see myself in that role one day.
Well, coaching is educating. And you mentioned your parents are educators. You know, when you look back at it, you know, all the role models you've had as far as coaching, but does your personality and what you learn and the person you are, does it go back to your parents and them being educators?
100%. Yeah. I mean, just everything that I am or that I saw growing up is what my parents presented to me, right? Loving, caring, friendly. And that's kind of, you know, what I am. I got five kids, right? I love kids. I love leading. I love mentoring. I love, you know, teaching. And so, that's kind of where I am. That's kind of like what my calling is. And that's sort of, you know, why I'm here today, man. And look forward to this opportunity here in Charlotte to lead, man. The guy that I'm working with, Bill, I think we have a lot in common. You know, this man don't have to be coaching. He's a very successful businessman, mm-hmm. and he's here for one reason. That's because he liked giving and liked mentoring and helping others. And I think that's kind of, I know that's how I'm wired. I understand his vision. I think Charlotte is a great place to be, have great resources. It's a great job. There's talent here. And I know all about it, right? And so just like at Carolina, we were able to do something special because we were able to recruit. And, you know, Josh Downs is my nephew. A lot of people don't know that. Well, he came to Carolina because of me, right? Drake May, you know, he went to school with my sons. Sam Howe played in my youth football organization. I'm from the 757. We got all those players from Virginia. And so we were able to feed all those guys to University of North Carolina. And so I'm in an area where I can help this recruiting. I think I can help Biff and help the rest of the staff get this thing to where it needs to be.
Are you on social media? How can people follow you and your progress with this new position?
Well, you can follow me on Twitter, you know, Dre Bly. You can just Google my name. And the same thing go on Instagram. So I don't know the exact underscore or Dre Bly underscore. I'm not good with all that. But if you just punch in my name and you see the blue check, that's me.
And it's Donald Andre Bly. Who calls you Donald?
So nobody. my dad, I'm junior or the second. My dad is senior, and my son Trey is the third. So my dad go by Donald. I go by Dre, and my son go by Trey.
All right. We'll continue to call you Coach Dre and maybe Head Coach Dre at some point.
Man, I just want to be the best I can be right now.
Well, Dre Bly, great to know you and get to hear your story as well. And certainly wish you the best of success with the Charlotte 49ers and years ahead for you as the defensive analyst for the 49ers here coming up this year.
I appreciate you. Go Niners.
Well, again, our thanks to Dre Bly for spending a little time with us and sharing his story here today. We also want to thank the Charlotte 49er Athletic Communications Department for helping arrange that sit down. As always, we appreciate you watching and listening and invite you to like, to share, and to subscribe to our YouTube channel. More great guests come your way very soon. For JR Quitman, our creator, producer, and director, I'm Mike Vaccaro. We'll see you next time for another edition of In the Front Row with Mike Vaccaro. Have a great day, everybody.